Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Coach's Corner, where we talk with other coaches and people who inspire, move, and motivate people to action. Listeners will learn about coaching and the many coaching niches and have an opportunity to ask questions of the many wonderful coaches who are my guests. I'm Coach Andrew Poritz from Ingenuity Coaching. I help people to discover and fulfill their passions and greatness. My mission is to inspire and challenge you to dream big dreams, and with my coaching, help you to manifest those dreams into reality. You can visit my website at www.myfuturecoach.com. If you're listening live and want to call in with a question, the phone number here is 646-929-2893. Again, that's 646-929-2893. You'll be able to listen to the show on the phone if you're calling in, and then if you press the number 1, that will let me know that you have a question, and then I can pick it up. We also have a live chat room right on the show page where you can join in and ask questions there. My guest tonight is Damian McCann, a co-founder of the Brooklyn Body Talk Center. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about Body Talk, which is a revolutionary and truly holistic healthcare system founded by Dr. John Veltheim and the breakthrough system developed by Esther Veltheim and other transformational techniques that are used at the Brooklyn Body Talk Center. Damian, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Good to talk to you.
So it's always interesting to have somebody from with another sound in their voice. And so you're from Ireland.
I'm from Ireland, yeah, if you can tell by the accent. I've been living here for 2.5 years now and been talking to a lot of Americans. So my accent has changed somewhat, but there's still a bit of Irish in there, yeah, for sure.
That's so good to be talking to you, laddie.
Top of the morning.
I just thought I'd make you feel at home and give you
a little
bad brogue.
That's exactly
the best we can do tonight.
Exactly.
So
that's a pretty good accent you're doing there, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not bad. You may almost get away with it.
All those years at the Brogue Institute may have paid off.
It surely did.
The bars on Second Avenue. I'm not sure which. But
right,
that's another
more like the bars, right?
That's right. You know, we have a section in town on 2nd Avenue in Manhattan with not as many as there used to be. Every other place was an Irish pub. And there's still quite a lot of them.
Yeah, we do the pub thing pretty well in Ireland.
Oh, yeah. So, Damian, tell me, I know you're involved in a bunch of different things. First of all, tell me about the Brooklyn Body Talk Center.
So the Brooklyn Body Talk Center was set up by my partner and I, Brittany Bardison. We've only been really in business in the last couple of months, and basically our purpose is to get body talk out there to people. You know, it's a relatively new system. It's been around for maybe 15 years, and it is growing quite fast. I mean, I think it's now in 43 countries and translated in 12 or 13 different languages. But in New York and in Brooklyn, there isn't a lot happening with it just yet. So we're basically all about doing presentations and doing meetups and getting people involved with Body Talk and the Breakthrough System, as well as some other modalities that we teach and practice.
So I'm not sure where to start first. Should I start with what's body talk and breakthrough? Or maybe do I want to hear about how did you get involved with it?
How did I get involved?
Sure.
Sure. I'll try to give you the short version. well, it kind of goes back to when I was quite young, maybe 8 or 9 years old. And this is actually the short version. I fell off some scaffolding and fractured my spine. And that sort of healed, but over the next few years from doing like a lot of gymnastics and a lot of martial arts and different things like that, eventually, coming up to 6 years ago, my body just completely broke down. So it broke down to the point where, one friend in particular said I looked like a broken egg. You know, I was like hobbling around. I couldn't really walk very well. And was obviously very depressed, you know, the depression it goes with that sort of a breakdown. And I had gone to a lot of different experts, chiropractors and psychotherapists and so on and so forth. And they all said, well, you know, you're just going to have to figure out a way to cope, and you'll never be able to do any of your stuff again. And, you know, you can't ever go barefoot. You have to wear orthotics. And, you know, this is just the way it is. You're going to have to cope, basically. And I just thought to myself, you know what? I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. I think there's got to be another way. And so that sort of began the search for figuring out a way to get out of this, that particular rut. And I started studying a bunch of different modalities, some massage, some reflexology, aromatherapy, Reiki, a bunch of different modalities like that. And they all sort of helped, but not, you know, I was still in that same place pretty much. And it was a couple of years ago that I was in Italy, and I met some people who were telling me about body talk. And it sounded a bit strange at first, but I said, you know what, I'll give it a go. And I think after I had the first session, I thought, wow, this stuff is amazing. I need to go learn more about this. So I flew to Maine in the States a week later to take the training in it. And I pretty much moved to New York straight after that so that I could be in America and get the training and really see if this thing was as good as I thought it could be. And so then in the meantime, I've learned the breakthrough system also, which is kind of part of body talk, but a slightly different approach. And, you know, and now I'm at the point where I train Kung Fu 3-4 days a week, you know, not a problem. I mean, I'm pretty much good to go.
So you're back to the kind of health you were before you hurt your spine?
Yeah, I'm pretty much healthier than I ever have been, actually, yeah. And, you know, kind of in hindsight, I realized that, you know, if I had just gone and had somebody fix my back, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, I really wouldn't have learned or had the experiences that I've had in the last 6 or 7 years. So in some ways, it was almost like this incredible gift, you know?
That's a great perspective.
Yeah, well, it really is how I see it at this point, you know, because it's taken me, I now live in New York and I have this, you know, this business and this career that I'm extremely passionate about. And it's all pretty much because of that. And so I kind of realized also that, you know, the back pain was just the thing. Like, really, I had to change so much of my attitudes and my beliefs and everything around how I looked at the world and at my life. And then the back pain was no longer an issue.
Mm.
And so that's kind of a lot of the work we do with Breakthrough, where, you know, when people talk about being successful in that, really the thing that stops us from being successful is ourselves.
I would agree.
You know?
We are our own biggest obstacle.
Exactly. You know, it's like it's like these beliefs that we have about ourselves and about the world, and we completely limit our experience. And then that's, you know, that's basically the reason why we are not successful, because we don't feel it's safe, or we feel that it's necessary for us to struggle in certain ways, or so on and so forth. So Breakthrough helps to really expose a lot of that.
Well, I'm gonna read aloud a paragraph from the overview I read on the website about the Breakthrough system.
Sure.
So the Breakthrough system brings to the surface the built-in defenses and deep-seated limiting beliefs that prevent us from living life fully. In 4 modules, the Breakthrough system and associated free-fall course empower participants to take off their masks and open their lives to an improved experience. So, by the way, I have not heard about this until just a few days ago, really. This is new to me. It looks very intriguing. So from what I just read, what could you tell me?
Well, so it kind of, it sounds pretty amazing, first of all, right? It's
sure.
Like, wow, if we could really do that, that's pretty incredible. Yeah, the whole idea of limiting beliefs. So, you know, the idea is that when we're little kids, for example, do you have any kids, Andrew?
None to the best of my knowledge.
All right, well, I mean, as far as I know, I don't have any.
As far as I know. I survived the 70s, and, you know, who knows. But, no, I don't have any children.
None that you've ever been blamed for.
Exactly.
So, So, I mean, if you've been around kids, you've seen them. Like, kind of 2, 3, 4 years old, they're starting to, like, figure out how the world is and how they're supposed to be in relationship to the world.
Right.
So they study, you know, they study how people respond. If they behave a certain way, they see what reaction they get. They're watching their parents and how their parents behave. And they're basically formulating their rules for living life at this point.
Right.
So, you know, and these rules aren't always the most useful ones, because it's not even what's happening, it's more their perception. So, for example, if they see their parents having an argument, then it's going to just jot down the rule right there that, okay, well, if you abuse somebody, if you love somebody, then you should abuse them. Right?
Sure.
It's like, simple, okay, that's one of my rules. Or, you know, mom or dad is really successful and all of a sudden they're not around so much, and you know, all these different spin-offs, and there's another rule right there. Okay, it's not safe to be successful, okay? Or success equals limitation, for example. And so we're still kind of living out our lives through the eyes of this tiny child. We formulate our rules at this age, and that's what we take with us throughout our lives. And so, you know, a lot of these are unconscious too, because at some point we decide that it's kind of silly to believe that. And you know, the thing is, you never really stop believing it. We really just shove it down to our subconscious. And it's from there that we're, from that place that we're really creating our experience. You know, so you know, you can have somebody who's doing everything they possibly can, but if they have a core belief that it's not safe to be successful, then it's going to be very tricky.
Okay.
Is that?
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does this technology work to do that, work to change these limiting beliefs?
Right. So exactly. So the way we address it is we would take an overreaction situation. So by overreaction, I mean any time that we're blaming somebody else for our feelings. Okay? Anytime we're blaming somebody else, or anytime that there's something's happened and there's a whole bunch of thoughts and emotions associated with it for like hours or days afterwards. You know, like somebody cuts you off in traffic and you know, you get angry for a few minutes and that's fine. But if it's like 3 days later and you're still not getting over it, there's a slight overreaction there, right?
Sure.
If there's a situation or a person doing something and we think, oh my God, if that person didn't do that, I wouldn't get so mad. You know, I mean, anger is one overreaction. Obviously, they can be fear, sadness, any of the emotions. And that, you know, that's a kind of a trick that our mind plays on us, where it's telling us that this person or this situation is causing that feeling in us. Right?
Well, I'll give you one that happened to me the other day that reminded
perfect.
Me.
Yeah, perfect.
That was like a kind of an overreaction feeling that I noticed.
Uh-huh.
I was at this event that had quite a lot of men and women. It was in an organization I belonged to, and we broke up into small groups in which we were going to, we were told we would be playing Spin the Bottle. Okay,
nice.
And I wasn't told anything about it other than Spin the Bottle, and I immediately went into the reaction of remembering a time when I was a child, when I was, you know, 12 or so, and at summer camp, and was told we would be playing Spin the Bottle, and it was the Spin the Bottle that you know as a kid, and it was terrifying. I was absolutely terrified of the whole experience and the possibility of nobody would want to come near me and it would be rejection. I had all this stuff going on in my mind, right?
Right, right.
And that's the place I was in just the other night. It turned out it was actually not. There was no kissing involved in this Spin the Bottle game. It was just a game that was created. But I went into this thing, and I'm thinking, how can I get out of this? I got to get out of this room. I don't want to do this. And it was all that story from 12.
Yeah, exactly. Well, probably even back further than that.
Probably.
And so, yeah, so that's what happens. It's like it can be the smallest little thing can set us off. And that's usually indicative of a much deeper wound that's underneath all that. And where the limiting beliefs come in is that's our coping mechanism, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've had something that's, say, traumatic that's happened to us as a child, and then we we don't know how to deal with it, so we figure out a way of coping. So we take on these limiting beliefs, which are, I should do this, I should not do that, you should do this, you should not do that. And so they kind of work for us up to a point where we can get through our days, but then we arrive at a situation where somebody says spin the bottle, and all of a sudden it triggers your whole fears over rejection. I mean, without really going into the story, I don't know exactly what the trigger is, but we would find the trigger. I would get you to relive the story, and we would pinpoint the trigger, and so like all the beliefs you have is just kind of a coping mechanism around that trigger, and then we would then take a look at the behaviors. So a lot of our suffering is playing out these unconscious behaviors. So,
sure.
You know, for example, when we're overreacting, it's always goal-oriented. So we're trying to achieve a certain goal, okay? That's why we're overreacting, whether we realize it or not. And our goal is to control or change the experience, what we're experiencing or what somebody else is experiencing. You know, be it the person who's put us on the spot with the spin the bottle or whatever. And so in that regard, all overreactions are manipulative, right? Whenever we try to change or control how somebody else is feeling, it's a form of manipulation. So we just kind of take it apart like that and some of the unconscious behaviors that are going on that we're not even aware that we're playing out. And when you bring a certain awareness to that, it we no longer have to do that, you know? When you see it and you take responsibility, then you no longer have to play out those behaviors because you can, it's just like shedding a light on it, you know?
So taking responsibility is a huge part of this.
It's huge, yeah. I mean, if you're when we're making something else responsible for how we're feeling or acting, right, which is what we usually do, I mean, even unconsciously, that's blaming somebody else, you know? If this person hadn't suggested to spin the bottle, you would have been okay. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's their fault, or it's the spin the bottle's fault that you feel that way.
No, I blame the schools.
Or the school, or whoever, right?
I just threw that in. I don't really blame the schools.
Yeah, but I mean, some of it you do, because otherwise you wouldn't be reacting the way you did, right?
No, that's like, you know, people say, oh, I blame the schools. No, I blame the parents.
Oh, and the parents, right, exactly. Parents
I blame
are
the parents.
Yeah, parents are a good one to blame, you know?
I blame the president. That's another good one. I blame the president, the mayor.
The economy.
The economy, the traffic.
Yeah, exactly. So there's all...
China.
China, right, exactly.
Well, China's fault.
Let's not go there, yeah. So we have all these like buttons, and we're constantly blaming everybody else and everything else for our stuff. And so as long as we're blaming somebody else, then we're a victim, right? And as long as we're stuck in that victim mode or that victim consciousness, it's just that deep resignation that nothing's ever going to change. You know, I'm a victim. This is the way it is. I'll never be able to play spin the bottle. I'm sorry, I'm just giving your example. Right? I'll never be able to play spin the bottle, you know. I'll never be able to do a public presentation, you know, so on and so forth. And we just it's our resignation, you know. And we say, okay, well, so how do I cope? So what will I do? I'll just avoid situations where people are going to play spin the bottle. And I'll just avoid any situation where I might possibly be rejected. So in that sense, we completely limit our lives. You get me? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Although, you know, of course, the likelihood of the spin the bottle possibility coming up again, you know, it's probably unlikely. But, similar possibilities.
Yeah, totally. So what I'm saying is that the spin the bottle is just a random incident. There's the fact that you reacted in such an extreme manner is indicative of a much deeper wound, and that's what we would want to get to. Right?
Absolutely.
So the taking responsibility, so seeing the behaviors and taking responsibility for those is also shifting that feeling that we get. So, you know that panicky feeling?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, we can look at there's also a lot of that cowardly, spineless, weak, all that kind of stuff going on at the same time. And it's that feeling that's been triggered, right? And so when you take responsibility for those behaviors, it actually shifts. It shifts that feeling, right? Because it's the feeling that's really getting triggered. And so that charity is no longer in the body, so we no longer have that extreme reaction to that specific trigger, whether it's being rejected or, you know, whatever. I mean, without really looking into it, I don't know exactly what it is, but it seems to be something like that. That's a pretty common one for people.
You know,
and
it's
so
funny.
Sorry, go ahead.
Before, you were talking about the things that you should and shouldn't do, those commands, and I was thinking of, are you familiar with Anthony Robbins?
I think so, yeah.
Very, very tall man. He does the personal power.
I do know who you're talking about, yeah.
But he always says, some of my favorite quotes, he says, if you have too many shoulds, you're going to should all over yourself.
You're going to should all over, yeah. I might use that one, actually, that's pretty good. I should myself.
You will should all over yourself.
Should all over myself.
All those should.
Yeah. I like that, actually. Yeah, he talks a bit about, you know, a lot of us with the blame, too, we blame resources,
mm-hmm.
right? Rather than having, like, resourcefulness, we blame resources. Oh, I don't do it because it's just not who I am, and I don't have enough money, and I wouldn't be able to do it, and so on and so forth. So, again, it's still kind of keeping yourself as a victim as long as we're blaming something else. Even in terms of, like, one of your callers, I think, one of your speakers was talking about how it's been well documented and shown how the best way to bring in business and clientele is to do public presentations.
Sure.
So, you
absolutely.
Know, to be there in person and to really do it. And, you know, this is just to give an example of myself, actually. There's probably a lot of people out there that have some really good business ideas and would love to do it, but just don't have the confidence to do the public presentations, you know, to get up there and actually do it. And when I started teaching first, that was a huge thing for me, because I never really got into any of this with the aim of teaching it. It just kind of happened, you know. It just, people wanted to learn more about it, so I was in that position to do it. But I used to get so nervous. I mean, I used to have, like, such an overreaction to standing up there in front of people and talking about the stuff that I did. And, you know, it was this probably deep-seated fear of, like, looking stupid and doing all these things. So before using Breakthrough, I would have to figure out a way to cope, right? Just to go back to the whole coping thing, this is what we do. We try to figure out the way I would do it is to like, with positive affirmations, you know, telling myself over and over and over, you know, you're the man, you can do this, you're the man, you can do this. And that would kind of get me through, but I would still have that horrible, panicky feeling and everything. And so then doing a breakthrough session, releasing that panicky feeling, because if you think back of it, like, even when you're with the spin the bottle situation, that feeling has been around for a long time. You know, it didn't just, like, pop up in that moment. You know, it's been there in your system for a long, long time.
Oh, absolutely. Certainly an old friend of sorts that I recognize.
An old friend, exactly. And that's the whole thing, that we think, oh, this is always the way it's going to be and I just have to get by. But the thing is, we can actually work with that and to release that to the point that, you know, now I can stand up and teach and really enjoy the experience, and it's not even a thing, you know. I don't even have to cope and figure out ways to stay calm or anything. It's just not there anymore.
It's a non-issue now.
It's just a non-issue. It's absolutely incredible. And that's, sorry, go ahead.
Are you aware that they've done studies of this, that the fear of public speaking is so great that it actually is well past death on
well
what
past
people
death.
Are afraid of.
I'm more afraid
to speak in public than they are of dying.
I bet they are, you know, because it probably triggers such a deep, deep, like, you know, fear of rejection, fear of, like, looking stupid. You know, all these things are totally tied into that. And fear of being judged is another one.
Yes.
You know, it just brings up so much stuff for people. And I guess it's great if it brings up that stuff. If you don't have a way to address it, though, I mean, what are you going to do? You just got to cope, right? You just got to try to stay calm and do your breathing and do all these things. But what if it's, like you said, like if it's a non-issue, if it's just not even a thing anymore? And that's what we do, basically. I've worked with a bunch of people on that specific issue. You know, one guy in particular who he got into a new job. He had a lot of IT, like, knowledge, but his new job was more in the sales aspect. And basically, as comfortable as he was in front of people, they could push him, you know, to more and more people. But he got really nervous doing it, and he just closed up every time. I mean, we did one session, and, you know, it's no longer an issue. Now he's incredibly, incredibly successful at what he does. Because he had the information, he had the knowledge and everything. It was like you said, it's fear of death, right? Some people would rather die than go up and do a public presentation.
Absolutely. So you've been involved in this work now for how long?
I've been studying different sort of therapies for maybe 7 or 8 years now. The breakthrough work has only come into my awareness in the last year and a half. And I've seen some absolutely profound changes in my life.
Breakthrough and the body talk come at the same time?
No, body talk is a little bit longer. For me, body talk is like maybe 3 years.
Right.
3 years that I've been practicing body talk. Breakthrough then a little bit more recently, but I kind of encourage most of my clients to do both at this point. They sort of go really well together. But as well as releasing, like taking the responsibility, releasing that charge or that feeling, then we also look at the beliefs around that trigger. So when you expose those limiting beliefs, they no longer have any power over you. It's only when they're unconscious and you don't know that you believe that stuff.
Right.
That it's tricky. And so it really is. I mean, I've had so many people describe it. It's like being freed. It's like somebody taking off the shackles and you're free to live your life without any, you know, this coping and this these limiting beliefs.
So how would you compare this type of work to something? Are you familiar with EFT?
Yes.
Emotional freedom technique.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, EFT is a pretty effective technique. It's a little bit more agenda-based, where, you know, somebody's having a specific issue and you try to tap it out on that particular issue. It doesn't really get to the root of it. You know, it's good if you're, like, having trouble sleeping or if you're having, like, a panic in that moment, but it doesn't really, in my experience at least, get to the real root of the situation.
Okay, fair enough. I don't know that much about EFT. I have some CDs and stuff about it that I've never really finished. But I know a lot of people who do that. You know, I am a student of all kinds of things myself, so I'm always very interested in what is it that's out there that I haven't gotten to that might be the one thing that might make the major difference.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff out there, you know. And this, in my experience, though, is some of the stuff that really works or has worked for me, at least, and also works for my clients, you know. And it's kind of funny, but a lot of other therapies try to figure out ways to cope, you know, try to, like, deny that part of ourselves that's maybe not so nice to look at, rather than just seeing it and accepting it and no longer having to really participate in it. Make sense?
Sure, it makes sense. Could you tell me a bit, have you met this, I guess this is a couple that created these, Dr. Veltheim, and is that his wife?
John and Esther, yeah, John Veltheim and Esther Veltheim. I have met John on a few occasions. I've taken quite a few classes with John, actually.
Okay.
I've never had the pleasure of meeting Esther, you know. There's an advanced breakthrough class, which I plan to take as soon as it's offered again. And that, I mean, the amazing thing with breakthrough is that body talk's pretty big. It's spreading pretty rapidly. Breakthrough, as profound as it is there's only 6 instructors on the planet right now teaching this work, which is remarkable.
And where are they?
The lady I study with is in Canada. I don't know exactly where they are. They're around the States, but I'm not sure exactly. I know that there's the lady that I trained with, Terri Ann, who's absolutely amazing, is coming and teaching a breakthrough here in New York in March, if anyone is interested in learning it. But I haven't actually met Esther, no, not yet.
Yeah, I just I saw her on the looking up the web page and learning as much about this as I can before we had a conversation, Right. And I actually had the information on the show page inside out. I had the wrong person's name as the founder of it. But it's all fixed now.
Oh, you had mixed up Terri-Ann and Esther?
I did.
right. That's
I did. But I noticed that they don't really put themselves out front so much about it, so I had to like dig around to see where it said they're the founder of it.
Right.
More like this is what it is, and which is interesting. So I feel like I didn't feel a lot of like the kind of ego you sometimes get in some of these
training. Definitely not. No. It's I guess, I mean, especially with Breakthrough, because she has done so much of this kind of work, you kind of move beyond. Like, Breakthrough isn't about becoming a better person, you know? It's
right.
Really just about living your life fully. Like, letting go of your limiting beliefs and living your life, whatever that may look like for you, you know? I mean, if we want to talk about success, because I know it's sort of some of the stuff you deal with, you know, if you don't have, you know, you can be pretty successful in work, but, you know, what about your relationships? You know, like what, if you don't have that, like, steady or that enjoyable even relationship to come home to, then you can have all the success in the world and you still feel empty.
Right. And so how would this play into it?
It's pretty phenomenal, actually. I've worked with quite a few couples, and you know, even in my own situation, I guess it pretty much saved my marriage. You know, because what we do when we get into relationships is initially we just see all the good things about the person, and we put them in this nice, neat little box, you know, and we decide that this is the way they are, and that's all great. And as long as you stay within that box, then I'm going to be fine, right?
Right.
Again, that's more of our coping, basically. And then as soon as they do something that's outside of that, it's like, oh, my God, you've changed, and so on and so forth. And we then tend to blame them. You know, then we feel bad because we don't have control over our emotions, and we tend to blame them then for our experience. So in relationships especially, there's so much blaming going on, and so much, like, projecting our unconscious stuff onto the other person, to the point where it becomes unbearable for a lot of people. So the same way that some people don't stand up in public to do presentations, sometimes the stuff that they're projecting onto their partner becomes so intense that they just have to get a divorce, not realizing that the reason really that we get into these relationships is so we can heal that stuff.
Right.
But if you don't have the tools to do it, if you're just so caught up in blame and you really think it's the other person's fault, then you know, I mean, more often than not, people just have to walk away from it, or else figure out a way to cope where they don't shout at each other so much anymore, but they don't really have a whole lot of intimacy, you know?
And so by utilizing these techniques, what you're really saying, you can get under them and get to the root of what's going on?
Yeah, you basically expose a lot of the unconscious stuff that's going on around that relationship, where somebody... You know, because like I was saying, in your example, it's not so easy to relate, but a lot of time when we're, these unconscious behaviors, like the manipulation and the abuse and the neediness and the cowardly and the spineless and all this stuff, we're sort of in denial of that part of ourselves, you know? We don't like to think of ourselves as behaving in that way.
Right.
So what we actually do is project it onto the other person, right? So that feeling that we feel that's coming from ourselves, we think they're causing it, and we think they're causing it because they're being so manipulative and abusive and all this stuff. And what we don't realize is that if we just took responsibility for that stuff ourselves, then we really wouldn't have so many issues with the other person, because it really is just about ourselves at the end of the day.
Got it.
Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
And it's very experiential, obviously, until you go through the process yourself, but I've seen it in practice, and I mean, couples who are like going, we just need a divorce, we don't know anything else to do, and taking them from there to being better and closer, more intimate than they have been ever, probably. You know, but again,
I was going to say, is this the type of thing that you have to do, like, face-to-face to do it?
I do phone sessions. Face-to-face is also good, but it is possible to do it over the phone, yes.
Yeah, I was just curious about that. Now, I want to just repeat our phone number if anybody is listening would like to be on the show and ask a question of Damien. The phone number here is 646-929-2893. And we still have 25 minutes left. If anybody would like to call in, now would be a good time. Okay.
All righty.
Plug for us.
Yeah, it'd be good to have a little chat with somebody, I guess. Yeah, so do you, is there any other stuff? I mean, it works really good for addictions also.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to hear about that.
Yeah?
Sure.
Sure, why not? And, you know, again, there's like a lot of people who could be really successful, but their addictions get the better of them, you know?
Oh, actually, I have a very specific question in that area, especially right now. One of the big things that's been in the news, I'm sure you're well aware, is, you know, Tiger Woods, sex addict, right?
Right, right.
And I have a person I know, and no, it's not me, who is a porno addict.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's pretty common.
And it's like totally getting in the way of his relationship with his, you know, with his wife and his job. And I'm like thinking, I wonder what's available to somebody. And so you are saying that this is something that can help addictions. How would you work with somebody in an issue like that?
So, well, I will always start with the overreaction, because that's a really good way in, right? That really is just our way in initially, but you know, when we go for whatever our substance of choice is, that's an overreaction. You know, we think that we need that thing. If there's that feeling that just takes us over, and if we don't have it, if we don't have the alcohol or the cigarette or the porno, then we're gonna die. Or, you know, I mean, it can be that extreme. That's what we feel. And so when we work and do some sessions around different overreactions, that intensity of the feeling goes away, because we're really trying to cope. When we're going for our substance of choice, it's coping. You know, when we get it, then we feel okay. But when we can address a lot of those feelings and that intensity in the body, the drive, the thing that drives us to want that thing is no longer there.
Now,
yeah,
that you obviously don't know, like, these people that I just spoke of personally. Is there something that you would venture a guess around based on other experience?
Something that I would venture a guess on what's
like
triggering?
What might be
is
a
it?
Trigger, like, you know, in a situation like that?
You know what? It's a really good question, but it could be absolutely anything, because we all have our own buttons, you know, based on our own set of circumstances. And there may be a few of them, you know, that there may be different things that trigger us, and our go-to then is the alcohol or the porno or the whatever, right? It may be a whole collection of stuff. So we would slowly work and chip away at it, and then at that point there's no longer that like urge or that drive, you know, because a lot of that stuff is pretty unconscious, you know. I mean, you know, personally speaking, I mean, I grew up around addiction, and I struggled with it for a while myself, and it's really been the breakthrough that just totally, you know, I had figured out ways to cope, you know, when people kind of think they get on it, but it's kind of always there, and you know, somebody can slip pretty easily, you know, it doesn't take much. You know, because that feeling is always in the body, and if somebody dies or somebody has something, you know, terrible happens, then they can quite easily slip. But if that charge is no longer there, then it doesn't matter what happens, you can still live your life. You don't have to depend on this substance to cope. It's pretty radical, and I mean, it sounds pretty amazing, but I've seen it in action, and even myself and a bunch of others have seen this work.
No, I know that for me, I think my addiction is probably around email.
Right.
Email, Facebook, not porn, but internet.
Right.
In per se, certainly, but certainly, I have who's emailing me? What am I missing right now? That's my
right.
Particular
yeah, I mean, we're,
addiction.
I'll tell you, we're all addicts, you know. I mean, people think, oh, alcohol is so bad and whatever, but you know, people are addicted to relationships. We're addicted to abuse. We're addicted to struggle. We're all addicted to all sorts of stuff.
I was once addicted to soap operas.
Anyone in particular?
Yeah, all the ones that are on ABC. For many years,
no.
it was a horrible addiction.
Really? See, so if it, yeah, I mean, if it's a problem, then we can work with it. You know, obviously.
Well, I broke that a long time ago. But that was I would come home and many years ago, and I would have recorded them on the VCR and watch them at night before I went to bed.
But like a compulsive sort of thing where you just couldn't go to bed without watching them?
I couldn't go to bed without watching them.
Right. So like, I mean, again, I don't know, but some sort of fear over missing something or missing out or, you know, I mean.
Well, that's probably the common thread, like with missing out on emails, missing out on phone calls.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So it's not the emails themselves, it's whatever, you know, the idea that, well, if I don't get to this right now, I'm going to miss out on something, or there's going to be, you know, and then there's all the sort of the neuroses and the obsession and all the stuff that goes with it. And so when you expose that a little bit, it makes it a little bit harder to do it, virtually impossible actually to keep doing it when you really look at what's going on there, you know.
Meaning what? Could you tell me more about that?
Yeah, I mean, well, without actually doing a session, it is quite experiential because we really, it's not just like talking and analyzing the way we do here. Like I get you to relive the story in the present tense, so I can see and listen and see exactly what's going on, not just your sort of analysis of it after it's happened, you know. So we really get right into it and see what the thing is, the trigger, and then take it apart. Sorry, I've completely. What was my point? Well, I think I've gone off on a bit of a tangent there.
Oh, did you?
You were asking me about.
Well, I was asking you about. I was telling you about some my addictions to emails, and I was missing phone calls, and we were talking about that and. Now you got me lost too. Well,
yeah,
we'll take a left onto another road.
Yeah, can we rewind it?
How long does it take? How long is it? How short could you do a session in? Maybe that's a better question.
People's first sessions can take a while. I usually leave an hour and a half. I usually schedule an hour and a half to do the first session. Can take a little bit longer times. It really depends on the person and, you know, how, like, where they're at and how much. What their level of like self honesty is, I guess.
No, I was asking because I figured in 17 minutes I was going to see if you wanted to do a session right now, but I think we don't have an hour and a half to do that.
Well, I mean, here's the thing: we've been talking about it for a while, so you know, I mean, I'm willing to give it a go or to do some of it at least, and see where we get to. Would you want to try that? I mean, it sounds like the incident with the spin the bottle is probably a pretty good one to work on, yeah?
Sure.
Okay, so, sorry, I just need one second there. Is there any other questions you have before we start? I just need to organize some paper and a pencil so I can...
No, just make sure we have enough time to close out and give out your website and all that.
Oh yeah. So okay. So I mean, what best thing to do is for you to just sit sort of comfortably and close your eyes, and I want you to recall the incident with the bottle, and I want you to tell it to me in the present tense. So you're going to tell it to me as if it's happening right now. And in as much detail as you can recall, so, you know, when you're saying it, you're going to say, I am doing this, I'm saying this, this person is saying this, everything that you're, you know, that you're thinking and feeling. Okay?
Okay, so I'm in a room where there are probably about 50 people of both sexes, and it's a big meeting. and we're told we're going to break up in circles, and we're going to be playing spin the bottle.
So somebody is saying that we're going to break up in
circles.
Somebody is
giving us instructions. We're going to make a circle of four men and three women in each circle, and so find your circle, and we're going to play spin the bottle. And at that point, I'm like, I'm thinking of, this is really a terrifying idea. We're going to play spin the bottle. And I have to find a group. And, well, if I'm going to have to find a group to play spin the bottle with, I better make sure that there are some pretty girls in it.
This is what you're thinking, is it?
Yeah, I'm thinking, well, I better have one that was somebody I actually would like to play spin the bottle with.
Okay, so just sort of, so who said let's play spin the bottle?
That was the person leading the event.
Okay, do you know his name?
Well, I'm not going to say a person's name in this, but
fair enough. Do you remember what you're wearing?
What I was wearing?
Mm-hmm.
I was wearing a mauve shirt, believe it or not,
mm-hmm.
and black pants.
Okay, so you're fine until he says we're going to place it in the bottle, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so. So you're there and you're in your mauve shirt and the guy's saying, get into your group, so we're going to play spin the bottle.
Right.
And then, so what's happening to you when he's saying this?
I'm thinking, I'm really glad I just used mouthwash. I'm thinking, this is scary. Oh, what if, do I really want to do this? Is this going to be... I started thinking about a summer camp.
Uh-huh.
And I was at that moment, I was like I was thrown back into another room at the age of 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big circle, and I just totally was in that circle at the moment that I heard this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what are you thinking? So what's happening?
I'm thinking nobody's going to want to kiss me.
Nobody's going to want to kiss me. All right. Okay, so I'm just going to say it back to you so that we're on the same page with this.
Sure.
So you're at this gathering. There's about 50 people. It's a pretty big meeting. And they're about to break, and they say, okay, we need to all get in these groups now, form circles. Each group needs four men and three women. And we're going to play spin the bottle. And
right.
When you hear that, this seems like a really like terrifying idea to you. You feel really scared, and you just totally don't want to do it. And your mind goes back to when you were younger in summer camp, and the same thing is happening. And the whole idea of like nobody's going to want to kiss me.
Right.
Nobody wants me. Right.
Mhm.
Okay. So is there anything that you want to add, or anything that I left out?
No? I don't think so.
Okay, so hopefully this will be nice and straightforward since we don't have a whole lot of time. But to find, so we would pick the trigger next, and so we would list some possible triggers and then pick the one that's actually going on here. So being rejected is one, obviously, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's huge there. The whole fear of being rejected. Like, what if nobody wants to kiss me? You know what? I don't even think we need to go through anymore. That's pretty much the trigger. Does that feel like a trigger for you right now if we talk about it?
Sure.
Being rejected?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now we'll look at the behaviors, right? So these are the ways that you're... When you're triggered... Well, actually, first of all, the emotion. So what would you say is the underlying emotion here? Out of fear, anger, worry, grief, or sadness?
Fear.
It's fair, right? So, and the trigger is being rejected. So, we're looking now at
Fear is sadness.
It is, yeah. So in any overreaction, all the emotions will be there, like fear, sadness, worry, the whole lot. But it's really, there's sadness there obviously too, but it's like you say, it's a terrifying idea to you. Like, what if nobody's going to want to kiss me?
Right.
Or like, I can't do this now. I got to get out of here. I can't play spin the ball, right? So the behavior, so we look at, so again, look
yeah,
at
yeah, I think that I'm going to be ridiculed. That's it.
You think you're going to be ridiculed?
Yeah, made fun of.
Made fun of because you're rejected?
Yeah.
Because
I'm, you know, I'm the guy that's, you know, I would be the, you know, going back to the age of 12, I would be the nerd.
Right.
Not the cool guy.
Right. The nerds get rejected, right?
Right.
So you remember we were saying earlier that all overreactions are manipulative?
That all overreactions are manipulative?
Yeah, we're trying to change or control our circumstances or the person or whatever. Right?
Right.
So can you see how your behavior was manipulative?
Just having a little hard time hearing you at the moment.
Oh, yeah. Okay, maybe I should start. Is that better?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm saying, can you see how your behavior was manipulative?
Manipulative of who?
Well, of yourself, pretty much. I don't want to do this. You can't do this. This is too scary. That's pretty manipulative to be telling yourself those things, right?
Sure.
And so when we manipulate ourselves or somebody else, that's, you know, to change or control or manipulate somebody is also abusive. So can you see how that's abusive?
Abusive, you mean of myself?
Of yourself, yeah. I mean, you know, we could take it a bit further with the guy, but for now, I mean, yeah, for yourself.
Yeah, it's an interesting term to use. It's not. It's like I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around it.
That's okay. Yeah, so it's, you know, a lot of times, you know, we think of abuse as like beating somebody up, but this is also a form of abuse when we're you know, manipulating ourselves in this way. It is abusive.
So it's a self-abuse.
It's self-abuse, yeah.
Right. Okay, got it.
I mean, well, you're also, it's kind of also to everybody else there too, like, no, like, we can't do this, like, so we're going to list a few more behaviors, and then we'll pick the three that you're comfortable with, the
sure.
three that you like to think about. So I would say cowardly, and we've kind of went through some of these already, cowardly and spineless.
Cowardly and spineless, okay.
Weak, see what else? Any ideas?
Nope.
I'm sure you got some there, yeah?
Say that again?
Impotent. I'm sure we have three there that you don't really like to think of yourself as.
Oh, absolutely.
The three that give you the worst feeling. So I'll read them out to you, and you just tell me the three that feel the worst to you, right?
Yes.
So the trigger is being rejected.
Yes.
And you act manipulative, abusive, cowardly, spineless, weak, and impotent.
Certainly weak, impotent. What was the earlier one?
Abusive?
Yeah, you don't really relate to the abusive. Spineless.
And spineless.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're the ones that feel the worst to you, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so weak, where do you feel that in your body?
Right, all around the shoulders and my belly. Oh.
Shoulders and belly. What does it feel like in your shoulders and belly?
It's kind of cold.
Uh-huh.
It's like a cold weight.
Okay. And impotent, where do you feel that?
I can't really specify that.
Just take
all
a
over.
Second. Just all over. So what does it feel like? What's the quality of it?
It's a feeling of not being in my power.
And then spineless. Where do you feel that?
In my spine.
Okay, that's a good place for spineless. What does it feel like in your spine, Andrew?
It feels like I can't stand up straight.
Okay.
And by the way, just to let you know, we have 4 minutes left.
Oh, okay. Well, we just try to get through this piece at least. Okay, so when you feel all this weak, impotent, spineless feeling, this like in your this coldness in your shoulders, in your belly, and this feeling of not being in your power and spineless is like you can't stand up straight. Can you feel all that? Yeah.
Yeah, and I also feel like this huge tension around like my in my head.
And this tension
around
your head,
my eyes, yeah.
Around your eyes. Okay, so yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. It's quite visceral, right?
Sure.
So the way we shift that now is by taking responsibility, right?
Okay.
So what I want you to do is picture yourself as maybe a 4-year-old, or maybe even the 12-year-old at the camp, right? So I want you to stand in front of you as a 12-year-old and feeling all this stuff, this weak, impotent, spineless, you know, this coldness in your shoulders, the spine feeling like you can't straight, and the tension in your head and your eyes. And you're going to say, I take full responsibility for acting weak, impotent, and spineless towards you, Andrew.
So I take full responsibility for being weak, spineless, and impotent towards you, Andrew.
Yeah, so for acting. You can't be
for acting.
Acting. Yeah.
For acting weak, spineless, and impotent before you, Andrew.
Yeah, towards you.
Towards you. Got it.
So, yeah. So I want you to keep saying it. When you really take responsibility, this feeling will shift. This like tension in your eyes and this coldness in your shoulders. And so look at him there. See him there at the camp playing, you know, this nerdy little 12-year-old who's afraid of being rejected, and you're acting weak, impotent, and spineless towards him.
Okay, so what I'm going to do, Damon, is I'm going to do that after the show is over because we have 2 minutes left.
Oh, wow, okay.
Believe it or not, I want to make sure, first of all, one quick question that I got from the chat room is there a professional training system for people who do what you do?
Yes, there is. There's you can, if you go to the IBM website, they have all the details there.
Okay, so I want to quickly announce the websites that are involved. They're on the show page, but I'd like you to give you an opportunity to announce it.
So to get any information on this, if you go to the Brooklyn Body Talk Center, that's www.brooklynbodytalkcenter.com, or my own website, which is DamianMcCann.com.
Okay, DamianMcCann.com.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
All right, so, you know, the idea is that when you take responsibility, that feeling shifts. That's no longer a trigger, and, you know, you're more free to live your life, basically. So, I mean, we should probably finish this session, Andrew, at some point.
Oh, that would be terrific, and I really thank you for that opportunity.
Pretty neat, right?
Yes, and so now I'm also going to say that, first of all, Damian McCann, I want to thank you very much for being on the show tonight and for introducing the Body Talk system and the Breakthrough system to my audience. And for everybody, we will be back next week. And actually, we're going to be having a special Friday show next week. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And good night from Coach's Corner with Andrew Poritz. Good night, everyone.
Hello, can we go on?